Welcome, Impactful Parents. It's time for the Impactful Parenting Podcast, where I give you parenting tips and resources to make you a more impactful parent to your school-aged child. I am your host, Christina Campos. Welcome, Impactful Parents. Today, we're going to talk about how a happy divorce is actually possible. Hello, my name is Christina Campos. I'm founder of The Impactful Parent, and welcome to my Inspire and Learn series, where real parents come on and tell their story of inspiration and learning. Because a wise man learns from his mistakes, but a wiser man learns from other people's mistakes. And today we're going to learn from our guests, Ben Helfand and Nikki DiBartolo. And Ben and Nikki were married and now divorced, but they have co-authored a book called Our Happy Divorce, How Ending Our Marriage Brought Us Together, Closer Together. Ben and Nikki are here to talk about their divorce, their individual pains and triumphs going through that, and their unique approach to relationships. Their story is sure to inspire you today, and maybe by the end, you'll even believe that a happy divorce is possible. So thank you for being on today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I want to start with your story first. Tell us a little bit about your marriage and then how the divorce came about and just a little bit about that process.
Well, I think that one thing's important to sort of put it at a 40,000 foot view is that we never could have even possibly imagined or even the realm of possibility that we would be sitting here talking to you about a book that we wrote called Our Happy Divorce 14 years ago. When we made that decision to get divorced, it just wasn't possible.
We didn't see it in the cards at that time.
No, it wasn't, right? Because the divorces, I think, marriages don't end on winning streaks. And, we had all the recipes or the petri dish for a high conflict divorce. And what happened in the marriage, I don't think is as important as what we did after we made that decision. But, you know, just to give you some context and color to it, is it ended much like every other marriage. Like, who is this person? who I don't like this person anymore. I think I married, she probably married Prince Charming and then was divorcing a narcissist and a jerk.
You know,
I thought I married,
Cinderella,
and
you got the wicked stepsister,
and I got the wicked stepsister. So, you know, it's just, it ends in an awkward, terrible place. And it has all the, the negative emotions that happen. So we made the decision to get divorced. It wasn't something that it happened because we got in a fight one night at at dinner and woke up the next morning and said, let's get divorced. It was, a while of
back and forth,
back
in the house, out of the house. What are we going to do? Fighting, not fighting. And just, I think that we finally came to the conclusion that we didn't want, that we really just didn't want to be married to each other. We couldn't be married to each other.
Right. And the, that decision was very difficult because of our son. I think if you had taken him out of the equation, I think that's probably consciously or subconsciously what actually was the tipping point for that decision, is we took him out of the equation. And if he wasn't involved, or if he wasn't our child, or he wasn't in the equation, what would happen? And it was a pretty simple answer at that point.
We complicate things so much in our lives, and it really sometimes doesn't need to be that complicated. And so tell us a little bit more about why you decided to write this book together then.
I think for us, well, I think Ben maybe, no, I'm kidding. No, he kind of, he had to talk me into writing, because I'm not so much someone who likes to just throw all their laundry out for everybody to talk about and understand and listen to. But I think that once we got to the point where people, like, we would post pictures on social media of us together as a family or us doing things together, people would start asking us questions, and people didn't understand it, but people wanted to understand it. And divorced people I had gone to high school with would reach out to me and ask me about it. And people I didn't know, like, just randomly would say, hey, tell me a little bit about that. So we got to the point, people would say, oh, you should write a book. And we looked at each other and we're like, first of all, we don't even know how to write a book.
We don't even know how to write a sentence.
So we were like, okay, let's, you know what? Ben's like, maybe we should do it. And I'm like, all right, I guess. I mean, and we fought here and there while writing the book, and I would tell him that I'm not doing a stupid book.
True story. Yeah.
But I think actually writing the book probably brought us closer together, like even more so, because I got to see a side that maybe I never really understood. So I got to see how he felt and how he was feeling about things that I maybe felt totally different about. And that's how we wrote the book. We wrote it from each of our point of views. So it was a learning experience for both of us, which was, I actually think, was a blessing.
Yeah. And I think the thing about how you opened the introduction, you know, wise men learning from others' mistakes, and you know, the idea behind this book is we are not therapists. We're not lawyers. We're not doctors. We're just two people who had a human experience and got it right. And what we're selling is nothing but hope and inspiration that if the two of us can get this right, two class A, you know, type A personalities, the sheep button heads, or the Rams button heads, that's us. And if we can figure it out and do it right and end up writing a book called Our Happy Divorce and genuinely love each other, then anybody can do it. And although it might sound, you know, somebody might go through a divorce right now or in the early stages or even later, that this is just, you know, a bunch of, you know what, it's not, and it's authentic. And, you know, again, that was the inspiration behind writing the book, that if we can do it, this is how we did it. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't because of any schooling or any education. We just, we just got it right.
I'll be honest with you. When you came to me with this, I thought it was really intriguing because I am in a similar situation. I am a single mom of four kids, and I am in pretty much a well relationship with my ex-husband also. In fact, we have a very unique tradition that we wrote into our divorce agreement, that every year we go on a vacation as a family together.
That's and phenomenal.
It's just the six of us. So just our four kids and the two of us, if we get remarried, if we do, you know, have, you know, other people in our lives, they're actually not allowed to come. It's the six of us. Wow. Every year. And in the beginning, it wasn't always so easy to go on this vacation, but as years gone by, I have really come to very much appreciate this vacation and what it does for my children. And from the beginning, same thing. I had a lot of people look at me and my divorce and say, what? I just don't understand. People just don't get it. It wasn't typical. And no, so right. Because it wasn't, you know, mainstream, people just didn't understand. They had lots of questions, and a lot of skeptical people, I think, were just looking at it going, come on, really?
Like people waiting for it to fail. Some way, shape or form. People just sit around and wait for something bad to happen. Like something's going to blow up.
And you said something in there that really was our secret sauce. You know, we talked about in the beginning, it was awkward. And let me tell you, our secret sauce is we faked it until we made it, looking back on it. And you know, whether that was our son's name's Ash, or whether that was at his play, you know, in second grade, we sat next to each other. And she was the last person in the world I wanted to sit next to. And she was probably the last person in the world she wanted to sit next to. But we did it. We put on our big boy pants. And, you know, we acted like adults and parents who brought this kid in this world. And then somewhere along the line, we tried vacations in the beginning. We tried one that was that was too early. And it ended up being like, this is never going to work, right? But we kept on doing it. We kept on showing up. And eventually we crossed that invisible line, and I can't even tell you when it happened, but it became natural and it became authentic. And then we actually have, we're both remarried to great people who have embraced what we're trying to accomplish. And they come on family vacations too. And you know, it's just sort of this natural thing. Like I'm sure your vacation is that we don't dread having to go over to her house once a week for dinner or go on vacations. It's actually something that is enjoyable. We all love each other and we have a great time.
I empathize and just like relate with what you're saying so much. It's wonderful. And I'm glad that we can get this message out into the world that it is possible. And I just wanted people to know it's not just you. I mean, I'm doing it too. And so it is absolutely possible. So looking back to the beginning, I'd like to get some more tips from you on what are some of the things that you really did right that helped lay down the foundation for the good relationship that you have today. And I'll know for me, for myself, it was really hard, but putting the kids first was such a priority. And man, did I have to swallow my pride and swallow just like so many feelings so often in that moment, in many moments, and still even sometimes today. I mean, and I'm sure he would say exactly the same thing. So I feel really comfortable saying that, like, but we always put the kids first, even in times when we just really, really didn't want to. Did you feel that? And what other suggestions do you have for the audience?
Well, let me just say, and I don't want to, because I think we'll talk about the good things. I have to say one mistake that I made that I would caution people against first.
A mistake?
Well, the first phone call I made, right? I left the house and... Yeah, we talked about the decision, but I left the house in just a very angry, bitter, tunnel vision mentality that it was all Nikki's fault. And if only she had done this, if only. And so I wanted to make sure that she suffered because I was suffering. And maybe that's just the male in me, or maybe it's just, you know, terminally unique to me. But I called a lawyer. And not only did I call a lawyer, I called a lawyer with some research on who was the best. And that was mistake number one.
Meaning the worst.
The worst for you.
Yeah.
Right. Or our son. But that was the mistake number one. I would just urge people and remind people that there's no award for getting divorced the quickest, except for maybe a lifetime of suffering. But eventually I came to my senses, and then the second phone call I made, which should have been my first, was to therapist, and dealt with, cause I think there's two sides of divorce, that make the recipes of high conflict nastiness. But that's the emotional side of it. There's the business side of it, right? Which is splitting assets and the legal process, but then there's the emotional side of it. And if the emotional side of it's not dealt with, it can sprinkle Miracle-Gro on the high conflict stuff. Right. So second call I made was to a therapist and just work through some of the stuff that I was going through and to have somebody be accountable and somebody to talk to. And Nikki was doing, you know, the same thing. And I think that process, before we dealt with the business side of it, helped not only the divorce, but afterwards, because we weren't as much pointing fingers right at each other as much as trying to point fingers at ourselves and try to find our side of the street and find some accountability.
I think that your tunnel vision is unique to you. I feel like that's very common. And so is the if onlys, the if only they had done this, the blame game. That's
always somebody else's fault.
Always. Like,
it's never mind.
So I feel like, and when you're in that space, it almost feels like that's what you should do. Like, that's the accepted way to respond to somebody wanting to divorce you, like, is to puff up your chest and put on the protective screen and let me see how I'm going to deal with this. And it's very much of a, I'm going to get it. I'm going to go after you in a way, or I got to win this battle. And
right. Or I'm going to take away something that's important. I mean, for example, just a small one is we had a jewelry, Nikki had started a jewelry business and, you know, we were joint owners of it. And I told my lawyer that I wanted the jewelry business. Right. But I didn't want the jewelry business. I had no interest but I knew that it was something that had her name on it. It was important to her. And it just is a small example of what happens when you make decisions off of the hurt, the emotions and all that. You're being vindictive, or I was going to be vindictive and try to hurt her through the business process, which just screws everything up.
Yeah, no. And I think that, you know, therapy definitely helped me realize my part in it. And the fact that, you know, I think we both realized that we wouldn't have wanted to be married to each other, like to ourselves at that point anyways. like we weren't the people that we both had this vision that we were, this great husband or this great wife. I mean, I think that it definitely helped us realize like, okay, it's not all his fault.
Yeah. We weren't at the end of it. We decided we weren't Prince Charming and we weren't Cinderella, right? In our marriage. You might be now, but I bet your husband would disagree. But the other thing is, and the turning point, I think, was I had called her after I'd worked through this with my, with a therapist, and also I'm a member of 12-step group, and I worked with my sponsor and sort of went through, you know, the same sort of process of, okay, what's my part? But then figuring out what my part was, it was important for me, not so we could have this happy divorce or that everything would be perfect, but it was important for me to make it right and repair it to Nikki. So I called her one day and I asked her to coffee.
Out of the blue.
Scared the daylights around. I was like, should I go? I called my parents. I'm like, called my sister. I'm like, should I go? I'm like, what is this about? Like, I knew at that time where I thought his mind was. And I was just sort of letting him kind of be. And I didn't go and do, I mean, I talked to lawyers, but I didn't go and do, I was like, okay, both of us can't go at each other like this. I mean, granted, I was ready to fight if I needed to be, but I didn't want to go down that path. I think because I don't come from a divorced family, and there aren't very many people in my family at all that are divorced. So I knew that that wasn't what I wanted to do. I mean, it took me a long time to even admit to the fact that I was getting a divorce, because that was like taboo. And I thought, you know, my parents are both religious, and I just was like, oh my God, here I am. I'm the youngest child. I'm getting a divorce. I don't even know how old I was when I got divorced.
And the only one with a child.
Only one with a child.
And you know, the what Nikki was talking about, the experience,
like total failure mode. I was like, I
felt like a complete failure. And I was like, what am I going to, and you know, everything went through my head. How am I going to be a single mom? How am I going to raise this child? What am I going to do? I was scared to death.
It's scary.
It's scary.
Divorce is scary. And let's put that out for people who are listening so that it's scary.
So scary. It was one of the scariest things I've ever had to deal with in my entire life. Probably the scariest.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, same thing, you know, for a guy going through a divorce, it's the same. I mean, it might look different. It might show differently, but that fear is there of the unknown and some of the same things. And that's the beauty of writing this book. What Nikki talked about earlier is getting a little bit more in depth of her experience of the process. And the coffee shop's the perfect example is that, okay, I'd done all this work. I was ready. I was ready to make amends to Nikki. And I was, you know, levitating in my spiritual light. And I called her and I asked her to coffee, but I didn't really understand. It wasn't done intentionally, like an old Ben would have done, right? Like, let me just be very, not very straight to the point, right, but let me just call her and ask her to coffee. But I didn't realize that the fear that she was going, but what does he want? Right. I knew what my intentions were, but so we sat down and
he did have coffee for me, which was nice. So I kind of knew like that was sort of like a little olive branch was my coffee.
A little disarmament, right? Yeah. A little disarming.
Okay, he's not going to throw it at me.
Not yet. I just told her that, but it was pretty simple that I apologized and that I'd realized that I you know what I'd done and how I had showed up and you know I wanted to apologize for you know my part in ending the marriage. And you know then something unexpected happened and you know she apologized to me and made amends to me and look, it didn't all of a sudden become our happy divorce and everything was, you know, rainbows and rainbow waterfalls and unicorns. But, you know, when you have a lot of stress or a lot of pressure and a lot of anxiety and it gets removed and just a little easier to breathe, that's the sensation that I went through. And I think, you know, Nikki did the same thing, like, okay, now we can at least, and it didn't like, again, it didn't snap at that moment. We weren't all of a sudden, you know, best friends and decided to write a book. But there was just some room to move, but that there hadn't been a lot of space for that before that moment.
I love your message, Ben, of even if somebody's listening to this and they have started this very angry divorce process of he said, she said battle, and I'm going to win this, that there is an opportunity still to correct that and change your relationship with this person that you loved at some point. So it's nice to hear there's always a chance to go back.
Yeah. And there's always a chance, you know, for us to realize that, you know, this process, especially with the emotions and all this fearful stuff that we talked about that everybody goes through, that even with all that said, and this is the power of those feelings, is Nikki talked about her experience of growing up, you know, still her parents still married 50 something years later. I grew up in the exact opposite. I grew up in the, you know, 80s, high conflict divorce, you know, like War of the Roses, parents hate each other. You know, we were used as blocking and tackling tools and weaponized and all. And it was a terrible, awful environment to grow up in. And yet, when I left the house, I was still, I guess it would be, you know, subconsciously, but going to take my son down that same path when I already knew how that movie ended. So if that doesn't show the power of these emotions that we're dealing with divorce, I don't know what would, that I was willing to do that again to my son, even though I had experienced it, you know, growing up as a kid from 12 to 40 or however, my parents, you know, it doesn't end.
No,
you know, it,
and you saw your brothers and sisters have to go through it too.
Right. And it's, you know, for a kid living in that experience, you know, parents might think that once I get divorced, everything will be fine, right? Once we get that judgment, everything will be fine. But for a kid growing up in that environment, it's not fine. And it doesn't end when the judgment comes, because I had to grow up and, you know, if I had a school event or a soccer or whatever, I had to literally like, okay, who did I, when I went over to my parents, like, who did I go over to? Like, cause they were sitting on the opposite end of the world, right? Of who I went up to and hugged first. I didn't want to hurt mom. If I went over to dad, I didn't want to hurt. And you know, at our wedding, where's mom and dad going to sit? So it doesn't end. And it is a terrible place for a child to be raised.
And I think that was my motivation for always keeping the children first, was knowing that this isn't going to end. It doesn't matter if I win this particular battle, at some point there is going to be future babies and weddings and baptisms and birthday parties. And I did not want to be the parent that walked in and couldn't be in the same room as my ex-husband or had to make my children choose. It was a real conscious choice to say, I'm going to do this above anything else, even if it means I'm sucking it up and it's, you know, a little bit of sacrifice on my part. It's the priority.
Yeah. And just really quick on that, you said this earlier and it just resonated with me and I meant to say something, but the idea of, you know, swallowing your pride, you know, swallowing your ego, again, romance and finance, and for a guy, and I'm sure it's not mutually exclusive, but those are the two big screw you buttons, right? And I don't think they get pushed any harder or faster than in a divorce or relationship. And there are times, even today, 14 years later, we wrote a book called Our Happy Divorce, right? And you know, Nikki's remarried to a great guy, and they go fishing together sometimes. And when Asher goes, I'm going fishing with Chad, it still, you know, it gets a little sucker punch to the ego. It becomes a little easier now to deal with it, but first reaction is like, ooh, done with another man. Like, ooh, but you know, but the idea,
it gets better, but the sting never fully goes away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure that, you know, so, The swallowing of the pride, the swallowing of the ego, and realizing that our son had no choice in any of this along the way. Like, he didn't choose for Nikki and I to meet. He didn't choose for Nikki and I to go on our first date. He didn't choose for Nikki and I to get married, to have him, to get divorced. But yet we didn't want to stick him with the emotional bill to pay for something he had absolutely no choice in. So there is a lot, and there was a lot, and there will continue to be a lot of sucking up your ego and your pride and truly putting your child first.
I'd like to know, what other tips do you have for the audience on what could you do, or if you want, could you not do, that made this foundation good for you? Ooh. What are some other things that you did? Because they're listening. They want to know. They need this advice.
I mean, I think, you know, one of the things I always like to tell this story about how smart kids are. And I think that, you know, even in the beginning, we tried to hide the fact that Ben didn't live in the house and he had moved out and he would come over in the morning. I mean, Asher was 3 and a half and he comes in my room in the morning and he says to me, he looks at the bed and says, "Where did Daddy sleep?" Because he noticed that the whole entire bed wasn't messed up. I mean, and I'm like, why are you so smart? And then like fast forward a year and a half later, when Ben was dating his now wife, I would always call and say goodnight to him when he was at Ben's house every night that he was there, you know, and I'm just talking to him one night and I'm saying goodnight to him. And he said, "Hey mom." I said, "What?" He said, "Do you know Nadia?" And I said, "I know who Nadia is, but I haven't had the chance to meet her yet." And he goes, "Here, talk to her." Puts her on the phone. And oh, I was like, goodness. Oh my, like, so, I mean, I wish someone would have been in the room with me to have like, take a picture of my face. So it was just his way of saying, "Hey, like, there's this girl, she's hanging out with us. I don't know why you're not hanging out with us with her, but it's time for you guys to know each other." And I think that's I think that's my biggest thing is kids are so smart and we try to hide things from them, but they're smarter than we ever give them credit, you know? And I just think that no matter how easy we make this on them, it's never easy on them.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell your other story. Go ahead. Is the fact that, what was it? 2 years ago, Ben and Asher were away together and Asher looked at him and said, "You know, Dad, this divorce is really hard on me." And Ben's first reaction was, "You old jerk." I mean,
well, my first thought, not that I said this out loud, right?
No, but like, okay. I mean, the things your mom and I have done to make this work, but so like everything that we have done for him and as easy as we have made this and how we've blended our two families together, it still stinks no matter how easy you make it on a child. So imagine when you're putting the kid through hell, it's
just logistics.
Yeah. I mean, it's
Of two different houses. And I remember just like forgetting my math book. I mean, forget about all the other nonsense, but just forgetting my math book.
I brought his books.
Right. Or, you know, your shoes or whatever it was.
Like the favorite pair of shoes or your favorite, you know, the favorite pair of like shorts. It was just, it's just hard.
I think the other important thing as far as the kids go that I didn't get this opportunity the consequences of not having that opportunity were very, consequential negatively in my life. But okay, so my parents decided to get divorced and they came in, they sat us all around the kitchen table and they told us. So that was the event, right? And then sort of nothing after that, like no room for us to express ourselves, to talk about it, to
you were hurting.
We were hurting and confused.
That wasn't necessarily allowed.
Right. And so, you know, I think all of us, you know, sort of internalize that as kids do. And this is bad. Like, this is a bad feeling. You know, 12 years old, this is bad. I don't like this. And then the way I internalize it is I must be bad. There must be something wrong with me. And so not having that space to express myself or express my truth or my experience, you know, made me sort of internalize it and create something that wasn't necessarily true. So what we did with Asher is we tried to give him and continue to give him that space. And it obviously worked because, you know, just 2 years ago, he felt comfortable enough with telling me that this divorce is hard on him still. And so I think giving kids the room and just not saying mom and dad are getting divorced, we still love you, we'll always love you. But, you know, continually giving them an opportunity to express themselves. And Asher, we put him through, you know, some therapy, and you know, someone to talk to about it. If he didn't feel
always love it,
you know, he didn't love it, but I think it helped because it at least gave him an opportunity or like I said, a space to express himself. So I think that's really an important part and not have kids sort of, you know, internalize it or draw their own conclusions. Because for me, that conclusion was there was something wrong with me.
I love your suggestions and I think they're great. And that's how I hope people are listening and really take them about the counseling and keeping the door open and knowing that they don't, kids just don't want the door open right when the divorce happens, that years later, it's still something that they might need to talk to you about. And that's just a good reminder for everyone. I want to get to what I feel like is one of the worst feelings of divorce, and that is jealousy. And I feel like the jealousy thing, it starts right away. And it, I don't know, from time to time, it just creeps up again and it never really goes away. If you have any,
even if you don't want them, you still get jealous.
Yeah, there's jealousy there. And I know that both of you said that you're remarried. There's jealousy within that. I feel like, and with a lot of, like you said, when somebody takes your kid to the camping trip that you wanted to go on with them, and just it's divorce can be full of jealousy. So any recommendations, stories to tell around that feeling?
Well, Ben did what, you know, Ben did what most men do. Like they like to sow their oats with younger.
Yes.
I don't know. I guess I'm going to say hotter. I'm going to say more endowed women oftentimes.
It's a coping mechanism. We get right. It's okay.
Exactly.
It's our self. It was my self-worth, right?
It was, you know, they do those things. And I mean, obviously I didn't really want to know, but I knew what was going on. And I just, you know, I mean, but for me, one of the things that was very important to me, and I said to him one day, I said, just please, you know, no matter how much this is bothering me, but do me a favor, please don't introduce these girls to Asher. Like, please don't, until there's somebody that means something. But like it does, as a woman, it hurts. And it, like, even if you don't want them, that doesn't mean you want to see them parading around town with, or out of town or wherever the town is with these girls.
Yeah.
And, nice right now.
But the other thing about it is this is another perfect example of the ego. And when Nikki called me and asked me that, although I don't know if I was even planning or not planning on doing it, but it was the idea that Nikki called me and asked me that. And my first reaction would have been just purely ego of, who are you to tell me who I can't and cannot bring around my son? But then, you know, the stop and the, you know, swallowing the pride a little bit and the ego to truly that she was right at the end of the day. At the end of the day, what was best for Asher was for me not to have a revolving door of women in and out of his life. Just so I could, you know, feel confident or feel comfortable and have companionship. And it wasn't what was best for him. So I, you know, responded to her. Yeah, you're right. And so that's why she knew about Nadia, because I had, you know, kept her up to speed and told her that, you know, we've been dating a while. I'm going to introduce them together. And so she knew about it. But the jealousy thing, you know, for us, for me anyways, is after we had made these amends and, you know, we were sort of, you know, levitating, like I said, and on this path, Nikki calls me one day and she says, I just want to let you know, I've started dating Chad, who we knew, you know, while we were married and he was, you know, a friend and around and, you know, talk about it. Okay, here's your test, right? Like here's your test on this new, you know, if I forgive and forget and make amends and accept. And there was this moment that sticks out as far as the jealousy and, you know, how to deal with it is, Nikki called me. I was coaching Asher's baseball at Little League. And Nikki said, I'm bringing Chad to the game. And all game, I'm on the field, you know, I'm in the dugout. I got one eye over there on Nikki and Chad. And, you know, it was like, it was the longest game in the world because I knew it was going to happen, right? After the game, I'd been playing this whole scenario over my head, you know, who knows what happened in the game. But the kids, you know, like they do, they make the dugout a mess and then they leave and the dads go pick up the dugout. And Asher had already gone over to Nikki and Chad, and you know, I'd cleaned up the dugout probably slower than normal. And I remember walking over there going, okay, Ben, this is your moment.
It's your moment to shine.
Like,
Ben,
you're either going to fly or you're going to crash and burn, right? This is it. And you know, I'm just going over there and literally in my head, I'm like, okay, what's best for Asher? What's best for Asher? And you know, the first thing that I did when I got over there is I gave Chad a hug, even before I, you know, acknowledged Nikki, and just, you know, probably the most awkward man hug in the history of hugs.
Yeah.
But it was just, you know, the best thing that I could come up with at that moment to let, for most importantly, Asher know that this is okay. Like, as much as I'm in the inside, like a washing machine, just all my guts and my ego and my everything, the jealousy just, you know, going in and out. That was the best I had. And it was just a, you know, way of showing them that it's okay for you to love this guy. Look, your dad loves him, you know, but that, you know, that's some of the things that you do with jealousy. And I think it goes in the same sort of category as, you know, swallowing your ego and swallowing your pride. It's not about you. And so that was a turning point. Now we hug and I don't think it's as awkward anymore.
No, it's not.
I think it's like, you know, no, I love the guy.
I think for me too, that, you know, one of the hardest things when Nadia was around was knowing somebody else was putting my son to bed. Like, it couldn't be me. So, I mean, as a mom, that's like a stab in the heart. I'm like, no one's supposed to be putting him to bed. That's my job. Like, there's not going to be too many years that I get to put my son to bed. So, I mean, I do think, you know, I had to keep, you know, telling myself, hey, listen, she's going to love him too. Like, so it's just one more person that's going to love him. So I just had to keep telling myself that it was okay.
Yeah.
She wasn't taking him from me. She was borrowing him.
Right. And you know, the other thing about Chad that was, because I think in the beginning it wasn't, you know, conflict and I didn't crash and burn the first thing. And, you know, I sort of, like we talked about, faked it and, you know, showed up. Is one day I get a call and it's from Chad and he asked me to coffee. And ironically, we go to the same coffee shop and sit at the same table as the one that Nikki and I did. And, you know, he cleared up or paired some of the stuff and let it know that it just happened and made amends to me. And then he asked me for Nikki's hand in marriage. And, you know, he didn't have to do that. And even if I had said no, he would have done it anyways. But at that moment, you know, things started slowly falling into place. This is a good guy.
I mean, when you get remarried and you have a child, you don't, like, I didn't get rid of you.
No, like, you still
you can't get rid of the dad or the mom.
Right. And you know, the other thing is that, you know, despite how, you know, to spend a couple of minutes telling him, are you sure you really want to do this? Like, I could tell you some stories you're about to get into. But, you know, at that moment, like, it just, I don't know if that moment would have been possible or that opportunity if we hadn't, you know, done all these swallowing of the jealousy, or we had let the jealousy get the best of us or the ego get the best of us. Because otherwise, like, screw him. I don't owe him anything. I don't, you know. And so it was just one example of many along the way where, you know, our new partners, our new life, that they were, this sounds so apathetic, but buying into it, and they believed and they wanted to be a part of it and not, you know, sometimes they can be, you know, that cog in the wheel that sort of knocks it sideways. But we have amazing partners who aren't jealous of our relationship or aren't jealous or they think there's anything else. I mean, we took our son 2 years ago to Africa on a safari, just the three of us. So a lot like your situation and it wasn't that we didn't invite our spouses, but they, you know, my wife's got two young ones at home. Her husband's the sheriff of Hillsborough County. So they have, you know, they had some responsibilities, but their answer to us saying to them that we're going to take Asher to South Africa on a safari
for two weeks
wasn't, oh, you out of your mind. Are you crazy? You're not going in the middle of the bush with your ex-wife. They said, that'll be great. Asher would love that. What a great thing it would be for him.
I feel like I want to reiterate one of the things that Nikki said, that you said, you don't get rid of the ex. They're always there. Like, it's part of it. And I feel if you're doing divorce in a good way, the way that you guys are an example of. It's not always easy for that new person to come in, that new love. It's not easy. It's a transition for them. And it's going to take a lot of patience, somebody who really can, with open eyes, look at the relationship that you have with your ex and understand it. Mm-hmm. And not everybody can do that. And I just want to make that clear to the audience that if you're doing this right, it's not always easy to find that next person who's going to understand why. Well, they understand why you're doing it usually, because they know it's for the better for the kids. But to accept it is not always, it's just not easy. I mean, I can't even imagine actually if the shoe was on the other foot. So I empathize with my boyfriend a lot.
Yeah. And they get, I mean, the credit that they deserve. And quite honestly, like if we're talking about what's best for Asher, you know, and that sort of was our North Star and continues to be, that would include who we bring into our lives. And I don't think in the years we've been able to frame this correctly, or, you know, not sound like jerks, but they wouldn't be in our lives if they were going to be a disruptive force too. Because at the end of the day, Asher was our choice before we made a choice to get involved with somebody else. They sort of knew about it and knew the importance of what we're doing. And I'm sure for them, and I know for them, because they have chapters in the book too, it was hard on them and they had to fake it until they made it. And so we just got, you know, lucky, but I don't know if lucky is the right word, but we found people, and there are people out there who will get it, who might be awkward at first, and it should be awkward at first, right? I mean, I think you said that, but eventually, you know, now Nikki and Nadia go get their nails done. They kibbutz about, is that the right word?
Yeah.
About, you know, me. Right. They've both been to hell. They've been married to me. So they, you know, they can relate on that level. But, you know, the relationship's natural. Chad and I do stuff with Asher, and it's just it's fallen into this natural, authentic thing. But I also want to reiterate that this probably it might happen for everybody. It might not. But our happy divorce has evolved into not our lives. Like we're examples. You're an example. But it takes on many different shapes and sizes and things. Family vacations, not family vacations. But the main thing about our happy divorce is that the kids don't get stuck with the emotional bill to pay when they didn't pick the restaurant, they didn't order the food, they didn't order the wine, they had nothing to do with it. So usually you don't stick somebody with the bill. So that's sort of what we frame as our happy divorce, not our crazy, you know, like I said, rainbow, waterfall, and unicorn life. But we never imagined this either. So
I feel like the kids, they do look to the adult on how to react to just about everything in their life. And if you are taking this step in your life with grace, it's going to speak leaps and bounds to your children who are just looking for you for not only support, but how to react, what to do. And the audience is listening, and it's very common to talk badly about your ex, but just not do that. Your children love you both so much. So when you talk badly about the other half, it's just very confusing for them, because they're trying to look to you for how to react. How should I be feeling right now? Because I feel all the feelings. So which one of these do I pick? And they're looking for you for guidance. And I love the fake it till you make it that you keep saying over and over, because I feel like that is probably truly one of the keys to success with this, is that it's not going to happen overnight. It's really, really difficult. And you kind of have to fake it until you make it for a long while in the beginning. It could be years, but I hope that anybody who's listening to this gets encouragement from you that it's possible, and you will hit that line someday where you're going to wake up and feel good about the relationship that you have, not only with your kids, but with your ex-husband or your ex-wife. It was lovely having you on today. Can you tell us a little bit more about your book and where we can find it?
Everything at Our Happy Divorce, you could find us. And our book is on Amazon, ourhappydivorce.com, anywhere books are sold.
And parents, if you have an inspiring story and want to share your story with the audience so that others can learn from you, please go to theimpactfulparent.com, work with me, and go to the bottom of that page and sign up. And if you would like to become a more impactful parent, check out all that my website has to offer. I have parenting courses, family coaching, 30-day challenges, and lots of free resources for you. But until next time, you got this, parents. I'm just here to help. Thank you for listening today. Remember to subscribe and share this podcast with a friend. And don't forget, the Impactful Parenting Podcast is an extension of the Impactful Parent community. Go to the Impactful Parent website and download the free Impactful Parent app so you don't miss a parenting tip that can help you and your family. Thanks for listening today. So go to theimpactfulparent.com and see you next episode.